We only have one Hanukkah Torah from our Rebbe, from the Eish Kodesh, in the year Tafshin Beis, end of 1941. Okay, it's on page Reish Tes. Bimei Matisyo ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Anyone need a saver? Anyone need a copy? You need a copy? We have... No, yeah. Yes. I have in my office there. I'll let you know. Huda Venmo. Bimei Matisyal ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol Chashmonai Yuvanov. Kishomdo Malchus Yavan Arashal Amchi Yisrael. Lashkicham Torah Secho. Lavir Mechuke Ritzonecho. Va'ata Rachamecha Harabim Amata Lahem Be'esaratzam. The Rebbe wants to focus on those last couple of words. Hashem, in your mercy, you came to our rescue in the time of our tzara. Be'ei tzara sam. I don't know where it is in that edition, but if you got it?
Yeah.
You'll find it? Okay, somewhere, it should be towards the back. So Hashem came to our rescue, be'ei tzara sam, in the time of our tzara. Tzara sam. So the Rebbe asked, V'navin na lahashkicham Torah secha, if the Yavanim came to cause us to forget your Torah, so then, lo tzara sam bilvad hi, ragam shomala kivyachol. So, if Hashem's Torah is under attack, so it's not our tzara, it's Hashem's tzara. Hashem's greatest desire is to be able to give the Torah to the world and to have people who live with that truth, with that reality. So, if the Torah is under attack, more so than the bodies of the Jewish people, if the Torah of our soul is under attack, so then it's not our tzara, it's Hashem's tzara. So why does it say that Hashem, in your mercy, you came to save us from our oppression? It was Hashem's oppression as much as it was ours. But lama omrim be'is sarasam. Why is it sarasam? Now pay attention carefully, because I'm not sure I fully even understand the punchline of the piece. I'm not sure that I know exactly how he answers this question, but together I think we'll be able to work it out. But he says, let's talk about emunah, because that's what this piece is really about. Okay, we're going to talk about the attack on Torah, which is an attack on Emunah. And he says the following. Hinei eitzel Avram Avinu ksiv vehemin b'Hashem v'yachshaveh lo tzedakah. Avram, of course, is the first mamin. And the Torah says about Avram that he believed in Hashem, and Hashem considered it righteousness. Hashem was appreciative of Avraham Avinu's Emunah. Is there anyone else in history who had unbelievable faith that is worth noting? I think so. First of all, every Jew ever. But certainly the Jews in Mitzrayim, says the Rebbe, in Mitzrayim, v'navin al kopanim ma'at l'fisach leinu akatam. Let's try to understand according to our small minds, our limited ability to understand. Lama la'avram avinu nechshava amuna litztaka. Why was Avram Avinu's amuna so great? Now obviously, we know the answer. Avram Avinu, of course his amuna was great. But if you're acknowledging people who showed great faith against great opposition, how about the Jews in Mitzrayim? Ubi Yisrael kishahayu b'Mitzrayim dichziv v'ya'amein ha'am. When it says in Mitzrayim, Moshe, by the way, thought we wouldn't have emunah. Moshe says, they're not going to believe, they're not going to trust. V'ya'amein ha'am, those two words in the Chumash, v'ya'amein ha'am, very powerful words. But lo ksiv shenechshav alehem litztaka. Hashem doesn't seem to be overly impressed by that emunah. The Torah doesn't say, oh, despite everything, the Jews maintain their faith in Mitzrayim. In some ways, they were suffering more than Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu had, the challenge of thinking differently. And yes, Avram Avinu's life was also threatened on multiple occasions, according to the Medrash. But 210 years of suffering in Mitzrayim, v'yamein ha'am, that's worth noting. That's chashiv. That should be yachshav elo tzedakah. That's worth acknowledging as a righteous expression of faith, no? The Rebbe says, on a certain level, the Emunah of the Jews of Mitzrayim was even greater than the Emunah of Avram Avinu. Why? Simply, Avram Avinu at least is communicating with a God. God's talking to him. Hashem is talking to him. He's still asking a lot of him, but at least he knows what's going on here. He knows who he's communicating with. In Mitzrayim, Hashem didn't speak to them directly. They didn't even know Hashem's name. They weren't even sure how to define God. Right? A name means the definition of one's essence. They're not. They have this idea that they believe, but they're not sure how to define it so carefully, so clearly. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu says, "V'hayu ki yomer elai ma shemo ma omar aleihem." Moshe asks Hashem, "How should I introduce you to the Jewish people? They believe in you, but they don't really know who you are." Avram Avinu is talking to Hashem. They were suffering so terribly in Mitzrayim. They were so broken on a certain level that they couldn't even hear Moshe Rabbeinu speak of salvation. And yet the same Torah testifies about those Jews, right? That through much of that difficulty they maintained their faith. So why is it not given that stamp of approval from the Torah? Like Avram's faith. That's the Rebbe's question. So Rebbe says, well, we got to figure out what Emunah is. What is Emunah? Does Emunah mean that I believe in something if I don't understand? Is that what Emunah is? It's probably how many of us. Emunah means, right, the faith. Faith in something that defies logic. It's more than that. The Rebbe says, Lefi hasagasenu hakatanahi. According again to our limited understanding. Rebbe is speaking with tremendous humility. Again, this is in Tafshin Beis. This is the third year of his Torahs. So he's been through a lot. Been through a lot in the first year of his Torahs also, but all the more so by now. Kinoda misvar makadoshim, she'amuna eina rak mipnei she'eina yodeya ma'amin. This is a very important paragraph. The Rebbe says the definition of amuna is not simply that despite the fact, or because I don't understand, ein yodeya, because I'm an eino yodeya, ma'amin, I still believe. That's a true definition of Emunah, but that's not everything. Emunah is not, I don't understand, but I have a question, and despite my question, I go weiter. That's not the be-all and end-all of Emunah. So what is Emunah? He says in these next two lines, it's kedai to underline it, Rak b'pnei sha'or Hashem u'kdushaso nimtzeis bekerev isha Yisraeli. Emunah is the light of Hashem. It's that pach shemen, right? He's not using Hanukkah terminology yet, but let's think. It's Hanukkah. Let's think in those terms. It's that reservoir of light that is buried inside of a Jew. It's the Or Hashem. It's the light of Hashem. It's feeling my own neshama and believing in what I'm feeling, even though I can't really put it into words, can't really explain what it is, can't really prove anything, but I know it to be true. It's an Or of Hashem that's found bekerev isha Yisraeli, v'hi haroa es kedushas ha'araso yisbarach ne'echezes ukshura bo. And he perceives, he feels himself connected to Hashem. Again, in a way that it's not just that he has a question on what's happening in the world and he continues to believe in the concept of a God. It's that feeling of attachment to Hashem, right? That he's able to sense or to perceive inside of himself, not outside of himself. It's not that there's a God out there that I continue to worship and believe in despite the fact that I don't understand how he runs the world. It's this feeling of something that, again, is a part of me. That's why when Hashem began the conversation about Emunah at Har Sinai, how did Hashem begin? Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am Hashem, your God. It's not a commandment. The Rishonim, some of them counted as a mitzvah, some of them counted as like a super mitzvah. Right? But it's not in the language of a command. Hashem didn't say, Avram Zalman, I command you to believe in me. He didn't say that. Hashem said, I am Hashem, your God. And you stood there at Har Sinai nodding along, like, right, yeah, I know. Why isn't it a command? Why isn't it in the language of a tzivui? Because it's just a fact. And if you look deep inside yourself, right, if you search for the Pach Shem, and you'll find that it's there. It's a mitzias. It's a reality. It's part of who you are. That's what Emunah is. And therefore, says the Rebbe, V'or kedusha zu nimtzeis banu me'avos. The same way that, again, on the outside, I might look like my mother, I might look like my father, I might share resemblance to a grandparent, I might be able to say, oh, that's your sister. Yeah, I could tell that's your sister. Oh, no, I never knew you were siblings. Oh, now it makes sense. You look alike. Right? But even if you don't look anything alike on the surface, if we were to do some medical tests, right? And to analyze your blood, we'd be able to prove that in fact you come from the same source. So that Ur of Kedusha, right, is Nimtzeis Banu Me'Avos. It's part of our spiritual DNA. I like that term. It's part of our spiritual DNA from the Avos. That Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, even if we look a little bit different than them today, if you were to get down to the inner essence, the core of the Jewish neshama, it would be clear. It would be very clear and identifiably a trace of the Avos inside of us. Lechein Anu Omrim, and that's why when we talk about our relationship with Hashem, we contextualize it in the language and in the context of the Avos and their relationship with Hashem. Elokeinu, right? I have, yes, my relationship with God, our Hashem, but it's also Elokei Avoseinu, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. Each of them serves Hashem in their own way, and each of them serves Hashem in the same way. And that's the same thing for us. Shemashu Elokeinu Uma'aminim Bo, part of the reason that I'm able to believe in Hashem, right? Part of the reason that the same way that a child can't choose to not look like the parent, they can't choose to scrub their DNA clean of any trace of their parents, even if they don't like their parents, even if they say, I don't believe in my parents anymore. It's who you are. What do you mean you don't believe in them anymore? You don't like your spouse, you can get divorced. Lo aleinu. You can't divorce your parents, you can't divorce your siblings. You could choose to have nothing to do with them, but it's still there. The trace of it is still there. Shemashu elokeinu ma'aminu bo lo mishum eizatam v'seichel. It's not because of a rational choice or an understanding of something. It's not even about a common interest or value. It's a fact. The fact that we're connected is the same way that we're connected to the Avos. It's a biological reality. There's nothing that can really break that. We can ignore it. We could focus on it more or less. We could question it. But if you dig deep enough, it's just a fact. There's nothing you could do to really uproot that. Right? Which is sometimes painful for people who want to run away from Yiddishkeit. Right? And there's something inside of them that tells them that they can't. And that creates this terrible conflict. Which means, sof kol sof, eventually, yidach mimenu nidach, that everyone eventually finds their way back. And like a relationship with a parent, right? A relationship with Hashem can be complex. But it is. You can't deny that it is. It's a kesher shel kayama. It's an eternal bond. Lachein rak ba'avram avinu shayarosh ma'aminim ksiv bo tzedakah. So therefore, why is the tzedakah, why is the credit, so to speak, given to Avram Avinu? Because he didn't have a Masorah. He didn't have a Rebbe, and he didn't have a parent to look to draw from. Masha'ein kin Yisrael b'mitzrayim. The Jews in Mitzrayim, it's true, they may have suffered more than Avram Avinu. But lo ksiv behem tzedakah, why? B'vnei shekvar nimtza ha'amuna b'kirbam b'yerusha. Because they already had what? A Yerusha, an inheritance of Amunah. They were able to draw from the wellsprings of the Avos. And then he says something amazing. Look at this last line on the page. V'gam ba'avram avinu roim shal Amunah k'tziv tzedakah v'al ha'akedah, turn the page, lo k'tziv tzedakah. He says something unbelievable. He says, when does Hashem say, I'm impressed by Avram? Your Amunah is impressive. The Akedah, it doesn't say, and Avram brought his son to the Akedah, and Hashem considered it a tzedakah. Now Hashem does give compliments to Avram at the Akedah, by way of the Malach. Now I know that you're God-fearing, I'm impressed with you. Hashem was impressed. Why does Hashem seem like the most impressed? The biggest chesed you ever did for me, Hashem says, the tzedakah that you gave me was your Amunah. Why is the Akedah not, the Akedah was the ultimate nisayon. So says the Rebbe, the top of page Reishud, Afsha Akeda Nisayun Yoser Gadolhu. Even though the Akeda was a bigger test, more demanding, again, the same way we're saying Mitzrayim was more demanding on our faith than what Avram faced, he mipnei shekol ha'avoda ba'amuna tluya lefi erech amunaso. To the degree that a person has amuna, that will determine how difficult a particular challenge is. Im amunaso yoser chazaka, Oved Yoser, V'gam Moser Nafsho LaHashem. If my Emunah is absolute, and we'll get to, of course, the extreme example, which is Rabbi Akiva, whose whole life is waiting to make the ultimate sacrifice. If my Emunah is 100%, so then I'm able to serve Hashem with unbelievable strength. I'm able to be Moser Nefesh. In other words, once Avram has developed his Emunah, It sounds like a crazy thing to say. But the Akedah is not such a big deal. Because if you believe in God, you'll do whatever God asks you to do. Even something as insane as killing your child. Which, of course, Hashem never asked of Avram in the end, and it was called off. But Avram's willingness to go along with that was just a continuation, right? Avram created his own, you know, spiritual DNA. The same way we're able to look at our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents all the way back to Avram Yitzchak Yaakov, Sarif Gerachov Leia, and to draw on their Amuna. So Avram Avinu, that first moment, that kernel of Amuna that he created, was Hashem was like, wow, you got it. V'yachshevelo tzedaka. Amazing. But from that point on, even Avram's own behaviors are tapping into his own Amunah. And therefore, it's very impressive. I'm not saying it's not impressive. But l'chein rak al amunaso shaykh tzedakah. Only that first bit of Amunah tzedakah. Ve'im ma'amin kvar hel b'chiyuv es yitzchak l'akedah. And if you really believe, right? And Hashem has testified that Avram does really believe, so then the akedah becomes the next step. If I believe, I'll do whatever Hashem asks of me. Right? So the most courageous moment is really that first step of Amunah. And there was only one person, I guess, in history who was able to make to take that first step, and that was Avram Avinu. Which again, we mentioned the other day, that's part of the reason that if Yavan's attack on Torah is also an attack on Amunah, it makes sense that Avram Avinu has a lot to do with Hanukkah, which we haven't spoken about yet. Maybe we'll still have a shir on it. But I told you the other day that Avram is the same gematria as Choshech. Yavan is called Choshech. Right? And if you count the Chaf Sofit as 500, so Choshech is 808. And Avram, if you count the Mem Sofit as 600, right, which the Rishonim do, then Avram is also 808. So Avram is sort of the antidote to Choshech. And again, as the Rebbe is defining Amunah, what is Amunah? Amunah is an Or Hashem Ukedushaso Nimtzeis Bekerav Ishei Yisraeli. It's a light that's burning inside of us that can never be extinguished. By the way, there are some who say that the menorah from the second base of Mikdash is still burning today. It's hidden somewhere, but it's burning today. It burns forever. Sort of like, again, that ultimate, you know, everlasting expression of the Pach Shemen. And that's why Hashem says to Avram Avinu, to Aaron HaKohen, right, that Shelcha, that what you're going to have is going to be LaNetzach. It's LaOlam Kayemes. Yours is forever. The Nesiim, who we've been reading about in the Kriyas HaTorah of Chanukah, they brought a special carbon. It was very special, but it was short-lived. But yours is forever. Ramban says, yours is forever. We don't have a menorah in the Beis HaMikdash today. So it's our menorah is the continuation of the menorah of Beis HaMikdash. That's how yours is forever. But some say, no, yours is forever. The menorah is still burning. I don't know where it is in the world. It's buried somewhere. It's hidden somewhere in the world. But the menorah is still forever burning. Okay, John, you've been waiting patiently. You had your hand up twice already.
Like, not that these are like put down, like diminish our runs.
Right.
Starting the story for everyone, but at the end of the day, like logically speaking, if God spoke to anyone, like it doesn't have to be like Avram's only Avram because he was like whatever. But
you're saying if he got the call,
like anyone would just like you could be driving on the cross bronze and then all of a sudden God's like, I'm on today, and you're like, yeah, I'll do whatever you say. Like you could be. The lowest, no matter where you are.
I hear why you think that.
If you hear God talking to you, like, you really, like,
you sure it's Hashem? How do you know it's Hashem? Maybe you're hallucinating. Maybe you should check yourself into a mental hospital. No, that was part of the Bilbulim. I mean, part of the Bilbulim was the Yitzhahara telling Avram, you sure? Hashem's talking to you? Maybe you're losing it. That was part of the Bilbul. So again, I know I'm like cheating because now I'm like taking away Avram's Amunah when we're trying to say that was his everything. He went through the Akedah with his Amunah fully intact. Right? Again, that's part of the question. Was the Akedah a struggle for Avram or was it like a given? The Rebbe's saying like it was easy for him once he got past that first question of believing. But you're saying even the first question of believing, Hashem called out to Avram, Hashem spoke to him. That's what we said was the difference between a Jew and Mitzrayim who didn't hear the voice of Hashem and Avram Avinu. I don't know. The Sfas Emes says that Hashem was. It's not just like Hashem picked Avram. Hashem was ready to pick anyone. Sfas Emes says that amazing thing. He says, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha was said to everyone. Basically, Hashem was saying, Mila Hashem Elai, you know, who wants to join my team? There was only one person in the world who had trained his ears to hear. That was the greatness of Avram. The greatness of Avram was that he was tuned in to Hashem's channel. That's why he heard Hashem's voice. So it's not just like Hashem picked Avram. So, like, what did he do? If God came to me and told me, spoke directly to me, I would also do. He prepared himself to receive questions, and he explored and he analyzed the world, that he tuned into Hashem's channel to receive that call. That lechem, which is why, by the way, our Kabbalah is Olmach Shemayim, right? Our Shema is what? Is I cover my eyes and I open my ears and I say, Shema Yisrael, am I listening? Am I tuned into Hashem's channel? Do I want to hear the voice of Hashem in my life? Right? It's not, I cover my eyes, seeing is not everything, because I'm not going to see Hashem. Right? But I can listen to Hashem, I can hear Hashem. There's things that are spoken without being said. Two people can have a conversation without saying a word to each other. Right? So am I listening deeply to Hashem? But I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying.
Like, it's not like a competition. Like, who's greater or more? Like, it's like,
right.
Like, at the end of the day, like, God spoke to anyone.
Yeah.
Like, even like the lowest person on any level of religion, whatever.
Right.
Like,
if you knew Hashem was speaking to you, you would do anything also. Maybe, I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't know. If it's something you didn't like, you'd be prepared to do it, or you'd come up with a way to say it wasn't really God talking to me, or maybe I misunderstood, or... But again, it wasn't just that Hashem picked Avram. Avram made himself a kli to receive the voice of Hashem. So I think that's an important point here. And that's why Hashem is impressed by him. V'yechshevel lo tzedakah. Hashem considered it tzedakah. It was a kindness that Avram did for Hashem, so to speak. But I hear. It's a complicated sugya, yeah.
So to my knowledge, a lot of tests that we go through or that the others go through were just to strengthen one's emuna. So usually Hashem will give you tests that are like, I guess, cut for your situation.
For sure.
So if Hashem is the one who gives everything to everybody, so if Hashem gave Avram this ability to have this emuna, maybe.
So that's, there is an interpretation of that, of the pasuk like that. Vayamiru vahemin b'Hashem. Avram believed in Hashem. Vayechshevel lo tzedakah. And he considered it righteousness. So who considered what? So one interpretation is vayechshevel lo, that Avram considered it tzedakah. That Avram considered it, that Hashem is doing him a favor, that Hashem allowed me to believe. I thank you, Hashem, for giving me the ability to have them. Which is true.
Based on that.
But we always live with that at the same time. I mean, I have to do my part, and I know it is my effort, but I also have the humility to say, I'm just a kli, and even my success is not my success. That's the bittle.
Right, but wouldn't we say that, like, maybe Avram surprised Hashem, because Hashem was really giving him a test that he thought, like, would strengthen his emunah, and he wouldn't be able to, like, easily conquer, but he would be able to conquer it.
Yeah, I mean, every nisayon is an opportunity to stretch beyond your comfort zone. So, I mean, it's tailor-made, but it also asks you to do something you haven't yet done.
Right.
Or haven't, you know, to work a muscle that you haven't engaged yet, an emunah muscle.
Right. No, I just find it interesting.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Able to, I guess, it was like an easy test for him,
right. But
Hashem was giving him the test to...
The Rebbe's point is, the reason he's downplaying the Akedah, right? The reason he's playing up Avram's moment of Emunah, because again, on a certain level, that's really what it does all come down to. Right? And he's going to say in two paragraphs from now, Hamuna hu yisod hakol. That's how Har Sinai begins. That's how it all ends. Right? The Gemara in Ar Masechta and the Makos. Bach Habakkuk came and said, if I have to sum up the whole Torah, I have to define all of Yiddishkeit in one principle. It's v'tzadik b'emunaso yichya. Tzadik lives by his faith. That's everything. And as the tzadikim explain, living by your faith means that everything I do is an expression of emunah. My eating is emunah, my sleeping is emunah, my talking is emunah, my walking is emunah, my learning is emunah, my davening is emunah, my parnasa is emunah, everything's emunah. Yichya, he lives emunah. He lives and breathes emunah in everything that he does. Right? And again, if you have that, you have everything. That's what the Rebbe is sort of saying to these very broken Jews. If you still have your emunah, you have everything. He's saying to Jews, I know you've lost everything, but you actually haven't lost anything because the main thing is still available to you, which is what? Your faith. Right? What do we say in Ma'ariv every night? We say, Ve'emunah kol zos. Right? Which loosely out of context when you translate it. Amuna is kol zos. Amuna is everything. Ein zo yisel haTorah. Gemara says in Avodah Zarah daf beis v'zos haTorah asher sam Moshe. So the amuna kol zos, the entire zos, the entirety of what of Torah is amuna. Amuna kol zos. Maybe that's the secret of zos Chanukah. Zos Chanukah is like, you know, do I have unbreakable amuna? And the answer is, for a Jew, the answer is of course yes. Okay, let's go a little further. The cave and Shechein, it's a long piece, so I'm going to skip a little bit, but let's do a little more. The cave and Shechein, Sricha Gama Amuna Lios Mesiras Nefesh. So then Rabbi says in the next paragraph, Amuna needs to be with Mesiras Nefesh. Right? I mean, that's what makes it Amuna. What makes it Amuna? Again, if he's saying it's implanted inside of you, if you have it as Yerush from the Avos, right? So what's your part in it? And your part is to sort of work hard, to be Moser Nefesh for your Amuna. Now, obviously, Mesiras Nefesh for these Jews might mean giving their life in a very literal sense. That's what they were facing. Where does the strength of Jewish self-sacrifice come from? Where does it come from? Lo aleinu, a Jew is approached by a Rasha, puts a gun to his head, and says, bow down to this idol, I'm going to kill you. And the Jew gives his life. Mesiras Nefesh, he's supposed to. Right? Yareg Val Yavor. It's one of three things you're supposed to die for. I won't bow down to this idol. Right? Why is he willing to bow down to the idol and then you can have the rest of your life? Where does it come from? Which part of himself is saying it's not worth bowing down to this idol, even if it means giving up everything else? Because I'm keeping the thing that is the most everything. I'm keeping my Emunah. So I choose my Amuna over my life. That's where Mesiras Nefesh comes from. It comes from Amuna. V'mha Amuna lo tehei b'Mesiras Nefesh, echtifal bo Mesiras Nefesh. Without Amuna, Mesiras Nefesh is not possible. What are you dying for? What do you love more than existence itself, than being alive? And then the Rebbe says, V'inyin Mesiras Nefesh b'Amuna. These next two lines are also super powerful. V'inyin Mesiras Nefesh b'Amuna, he shigam be'es ha-hester yamin bo yisbarach. That Amuna demands, part of the Mesiras Nefesh is, again, part of the real Amuna with sacrifice is to believe when it hurts more than ever. Namely, Yamin bo yisbarach, v'sha'akol mimenu yisbarach litova v'akol b'tzedek. When you're facing the worst experience of your life, do you believe that Hashem knows what He's doing? That's Mesiras Nefesh. You're giving up your mind for Hashem. To say this somehow makes sense to you, Hashem. It's tzedek. It's just. It's fair. V'chol yisurim hei maleim avas Hashem li Yisrael. And the suffering of the Jewish people is also filled with what? With love for the Jewish people. You know how counterintuitive, you know how hard it is for a Jew to say that? That's what we learned last time. We learned last week. The chok of suffering. Right? But that's where Amuna is. That's where you transcend the world of Yavan, the world of Seichel, and you enter into the world of what? You enter into the world of Amuna. You're Lamala Menateva. You're beyond anything that makes sense in this world. And now the Rebbe says, and I'll tell you why I'm speaking about this. Not just because this is sort of what the whole fight of Chanukah is about, but the Rebbe says, understandably so, after 3 years of suffering, I see that people's Amuna is starting to crumble. Everything else crumbled a long time ago. But I see that people who used to have the Amuna, now they're in their Mesiras Nefesh moments of Amuna, and they're struggling. Again, understandably, we're not criticizing, God forbid. But the Rebbe's trying to be mechazik. Uli da'avoneinu ro'im ke'is, gam bein elu shayu tamid ma'aminim shleimim. Nowadays, unfortunately, we see those who once had full faith. Achadim pratim mehem nifkama ha'amuna atzlam. Some people, some individuals, are starting to have their Amuna damaged. Umakshim leimor, and they start to say, Lama azav tanu. Why have you abandoned us, Hashem? V'im kedei l'kari v'osanu l'tor v'avodim miyasim v'osanu, the question that we addressed last time. And if you'll tell me, Hashem, that you're trying to what? You're challenging me, you're making me suffer to try to bring me close to you, to push me to do more Torah and more avodah. Ha'adirabba, ha'torah v'chol kodesh neras. The Torah and all that is holy is being destroyed. So that's not working. Clearly, you're not getting more Torah and mitzvahs out of us by creating a holocaust. That's not working. And then the Rebbe says, let me teach you. There's two different ways to ask a question. And this next paragraph is also really important. Because you can question Hashem b'derech tefillah. But if you question Hashem b'derech question, then it's a lack of amunah. And again, I'm not being insensitive to the human to the human reality. We all have questions. It's normal to have questions. The world is a broken place sometimes, and you're left asking, I don't get it, Hashem. And Hashem's response to you is, right, you don't get it. So have the humility to have amunah despite the fact that you don't get it. The Rebbe says, V'hinayim midaber isha Yisraeli zos b'lashon tefillah v'tachanunim. This is a beautiful paragraph. If you're asking the question as a way of davening to Hashem, if this is your hisbodidus, if this is your way of talking to Hashem, if you're respectfully asking the question, not because you're questioning does God know what he's doing, but you're trying to use it as a way of arousing Hashem's response to your pain. V'shvichas libo lifnei Hashem, then tovehi. If it's not really a question, right? I do this all the time, by the way. I do this all the time. I question Hashem b'derech tefillah. So if someone's suffering and I'm davening on their behalf, and I say, Hashem, why is this fair? I'm not questioning why. I know Hashem. I don't know anything. I believe in Hashem. I'm not pretending God. I'm not a question on God. It's not a pagam in my faith. It's saying, Hashem, I don't want to see this person suffer. And Hashem knows that. Hashem knows that Moshe Tzvi is not challenging his authority. I'm not challenging God's authority. I'm also not claiming I understand what God does. So as a human being, I'm confused. But I'm davening in a way of questioning. It's a chashuv thing. About im chas v'chalila maksha kushios. But if you're asking because you really think you know better than God, va'afilum eino maksha rak emunaso b'pnimius libo nifkma chas v'chalila. And even if you're not questioning, meaning you know that God believes, but your amuna is hurting, because the question is hurting your amuna, there's a pagam in your amuna. If your amuna has become damaged, as Hashem yishmerenu. Then the Rebbe says, then maybe we've lost everything. If Hashem took away our tefillin, that's Hashem's choice. And you know what? It's Hashem's problem. Maybe that's a very chutzpah thing to say. I say it all the time. I'm sitting with someone who is struggling with whatever. I'm trying to mechazek them. And maybe I have some helpful advice and maybe I don't. And then afterwards I say to Hashem, it's your problem. It's not my problem. I'm here to help. I'm happy to help. This is your child. This Jew, as much as he's my problem, he's much more your problem. It's your problem, Hashem. So you clean up this mess. You fix this. What do you want from me? I'm not being chutzpedik to Hashem. I mean, I am, but that's a holy chutzpedik. I mean, that's a chutzpedik b'derech tefillah. That's okay. Rebbe's saying that's okay. If it's b'derech lashon tefillah v'tachanunim, if it's a question that's an expression of what? Of a Jew communicating with his Creator, that's beautiful. But it's when I'm questioning in a way where I'm, you know, condescending because I think I know better than God, then Hashem says, what are you talking about? You don't know anything about anything. The Rebbe says in the next paragraph, Ha'amunah hi yesod hakol, Amunah is everything. Jump down two paragraphs, jump to the end of a page ratio, Uva Emes, bottom paragraph, the big paragraph. Uve'emes ma makom lekushios chas v'chalila ulesheilos. What place is there for questions? Says the Rebbe, let's just make a simple calculation for a moment. Heid emes sheyesur v'kamo eilu sharu sovlam ata ba'os rak achas l'kama me'el shonim. It's true, there's a part of us that says, why me, right? That's always the response when a person suffers. Why me? So the Rebbe is saying, why not you? Why not you? Why would you think that you're exempt from this? Everyone suffers. Why would you think not you? You'll tell me what, this type of suffering only rolls around every couple of hundred years? You know? We mentioned yesterday that the Zohar said in the year Zos, right? Hazos, in the year 5408, right? 1648, there's going to be big things happening in the world. They saw it as a possible messianic, you know, opportunity, and it turned into horrible massacres and pogroms and Gezeros Tach V'Tat, horrific destruction of Jewish lives in 1648, 1649. So you'll say, why me? And then a couple hundred years later, it's here we go again. Now we're in the Holocaust. Bad timing, why me? So why not you? Why not you? That's a scary question, but why not me? Right? Why should it always be someone else? Oh, Nebuch, you heard what happened to so-and-so? Oh, it's terrible. Happy it's not me. The Rebbe says that's selfish. He's going to talk about that, the selfishness of when you see someone else suffering and you feel bad for them, part of what you really feel is just bad for yourself. You're scared you're next. He's going to talk about it in a second. But he says, why do you think not you? How do you expect to understand these things? And you're going to have a pagam and your amuna because of that? He says, four lines from the end of the page, Imgam kelach echad shel esev she'asa Hashem lo navin. You don't understand the blade of grass. You can explain the inner workings of a single blade of grass? You know how much wisdom is in a single blade of grass? You know how many libraries you could fill with just the analysis of a blade of grass? Of books and books, shelves and shelves of books? So you don't understand the blade of grass. You don't understand its inner workings. So you'll say, what do you mean? I took a class. I know. Yeah. But if you really took that class, what you learned in that class is the little bit that you understand is that there's a lot more I don't understand. Right? So you understand maybe more than the guy who's never studied a blade of grass, but you've learned, right? Whoa, I never realized there's so much wisdom in a blade of grass. So if you don't understand a blade of grass, you don't understand your soul. Definitely can't explain that. I was talking to a guy the other day. He told me, he said he wants to get together with me. An older fellow whose parents have passed on. And he said he wants to talk to me about, he's like grappling and struggling a little bit with trying to understand like where his parents are now. I was like, I definitely don't have an answer to that, but I'm happy to get together. Happy to talk about what I've read in books that I don't understand. So we don't understand the soul. I don't know where this neshama. I don't know. Where is my neshama? I can tell you what the brachos daf yud. The neshama fills the body. Shkayach. You know what that means? Anyone knows what that means? Anyone can give a 1-hour shiur on that topic? Let alone talk about it forever because it's infinitely deep. So we don't understand the blade of grass. We don't understand the soul. V'kol shekein es malach. V'kol shekein es daitel yizbal. You understand what angels are? You understand what Hashem is? You understand the mind of God? I don't get it. Torah doesn't make sense. Torah doesn't make sense because what? Because you spent 12 minutes reading it. You've even read the book cover to cover. So how on earth do we expect? Right? He's not trying to make us feel bad. He's saying, where's the humility? Of course you don't understand. Why would we understand? Right? Now again, a cynical person would say, okay, but this is like the ultimate way that religion protects itself from any questions. So that's why the Rebbe said, Amunah is not just, again, it's not blind faith. It's a recognition of the Or Eloki inside of you. So you say, oh, but a Christian or a Muslim feels the same thing. I don't have to grapple with that right now. You know why? Because I'm Jewish. So I only have to know what my religion believes, and I have to know it deeply. I have to study it deeply. You'll tell me, but some Southern Baptist also feels the light of God inside of him. Okay. Maybe he's also feeling the light of Hashem inside of him. Yeah, but he calls it Jesus. Okay, he can call it whatever he wants to call it. He's also created a Bitzelim Elokim. Maybe that's what he's feeling. Maybe he's mislabeling it. Yeah, but what makes you think that we're right? How do you know that we're right? Maybe they're right. Okay. I'm a Jew, and I'm planning on sticking it out till the end. So I'm trying to understand what Jews believe. I'm not scared of other religions. Do you want to try to prove to me that someone's got a better religion than the Torah HaKadosha? I'll listen. I'm not scared. I'm not afraid I'm going to be convinced. I'm not afraid of it. Again, I don't need to dedicate my life to mastering the Quran. I'm not scared of it. I'm not scared I'm going to see a wisdom there that, oh my gosh, I can't believe I've been Jewish all this time. Right? Been on the wrong track. If you've tasted Torah, if you've met real tzaddikim, you know, if you felt your amunah, it's a metzias, it's a fact. So Rebbe says, where's the humility to, right? He's challenging people whose amunah is hurting. Understandably so. Understandably so. Okay, let's go to the top of the next page. So the Rebbe says, so what is this? Why is it that Jews have suffered throughout history, that somehow there are those who have maintained their Muna, and there are those who are struggling? Right? What decides whether a person is going to make it with their Muna intact or not? Again, this is not a critique, and it's not our place to criticize anyone who went through the Holocaust and came out with greater faith or with lesser faith. It's a very complicated thing. Your job is not to judge anyone else. Alti dan yachidi, she'ain dan yachidi alecha. The only one who judges alone is Hashem. That's between that person and God. Right? But to ask ourselves, for our own selves, to learn, to ask for ourselves, what helps a person to survive Yisurim with Emunah intact, and what causes a person to break, according to our Rebbe. So look what he says. The paragraph on page Reishit Aleph, six lines down. Hatam she'ish kazeh nifgam be'emunaso mi'yisurim shel zmanenu yoser. Why is it that the Emunah seems to be struggling more today than in the past? And again, bear in mind where the Rebbe is talking about and try to fast forward now to our very, very selfish, self-absorbed world. Hu mishum she'atzmuso, here's the key line, she'atzmuso v'yisurav nogim lo yoser. Because we take it more personally. Because maybe in an unhealthy way I'm obsessed with myself. Maybe I don't see my existence in this world as a shlichus. Maybe if I really felt that I was a shliach Hashem, then I would do the job that I'm asked to do. And if the job is to live and to learn and to spread Torah and to et cetera, then that's my job. If my job lo aleinu, and you could say lo aleinu, if my job lo aleinu, if I've been selected for the difficult job of dying in Auschwitz, then that's my job. And that's why Jews went to the gas chamber saying, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That was their job. Right? People who understood, this is my job. Right? Well, I want to live, I enjoy being alive, but this is what Hashem, this is, it's not my life. It's what Hashem has given me. This is my shlichus. These are very heavy ideas. I'm not like preaching. And the Rebbe's not preaching at us. He understands this is heavy. But the Rebbe's saying, to the degree that you take the Yisurim personally, right, and you make it about yourself, so you're not going to be able to carry out that shlichus. Because you're not working for Hashem, you're working for yourself. That's why Emunah is Gematria Eved Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of the Torah is called what? Moshe Avdi, Moshe Eved Hashem. The ultimate compliment, Eved Hashem is Gematria Emunah. Because to the degree that my Emunah is fully, 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 fully intact, I'm prepared to be a servant to the Creator, to do what He asks me to do. That's why the Rebbe says, Akedas Yitzchak is not such a challenge for Avram once he's hit that Amunah point. Because as a true mammon, not as a theoretical mammon, as a true mammon, he'll do anything. That's what an Eved Hashem is. I'll do whatever the Avdus is. Hein Omer Ha'ish Shirakiv Ne Shiroa and Nashim Yizulaso Ma'unim Kol Kach Nirta. A person will say, why am I afraid? Because I see the pain and the suffering of others, and that causes me to tremble. Says the Rebbe, are you feeling their pain, or you're just scared again for yourself? Yes, it's true that you do feel the pain of others, of fellow Jews. Aval mikol makom, says the Rebbe, betoch tochiyuso, in your inner emotional world, hispaluso hayisera, the reason that you're so shaken, ad kedei lehipagim chas v'shalom, the reason that it's becoming a pagam in your emunah, the reason lahakshos kushios, you're not asking because you feel bad for that person. Right. Your emunah is damaged because what? You don't really know how that person responded. That person maybe died a holy martyr, Kiddush Hashem. But you're scared. You're scared for yourself. You're scared you're not going to be able to carry out the job as well as that person did. So when you're challenging Hashem on behalf of that person, it's really an expression of your own lack of faith. He may have been happy to die on Kiddush Hashem. He had that degree of emunah. But you're challenging Hashem because you're scared in your heart of hearts. You're not sure that your emunah is intact enough. And that's what I'm telling you, says the Rebbe. You need to be prepared to give up your life, to give up your essence, to give up your negios, your biases. You have a bias. Your bias towards wanting to exist. I am too. We all are. Everyone is. Of course you are. But to the degree that I'm wholesome in my absolute self-sacrifice, I'll be prepared to what? To die al Kiddush Hashem. The Rebbe concludes the piece by talking about Rabbi Akiva. Of course, Rabbi Akiva was surrounded by his students as the Romans were ripping off his flesh, dying a holy martyr. One of 10 great rabbis selected, the Asara Haruge Malchus. And of course, they said to Rabbi Akiva, right? In the Gemara in Brachos, they said Rabbi Akiva, Rabbeinu Ad Khan. To such a degree, a person has to be prepared to sacrifice. Ask a question of the Talmid of Rabbi Akiva. Did they really have a lack of emunah, students of Rabbi Akiva? They never heard that Jews sometimes die al Kiddush Hashem? What were they saying to Rabbi Akiva? And Rabbi Akiva's response is, yes, my whole life I've been waiting for this moment. First of all, that's like a little weird. Your whole life you're waiting to have your flesh ripped off and die a martyr's death. I mean, that's, you know, I don't know. That doesn't sound like a very joyous thing to focus on all the time. I mean, it's a possible part of the Jewish experience, but that's Rabbi Akiva. That's like, no, I mean, I've been waiting for this moment. You've been waiting? Don't be so excited to... What was he saying to his students? What were they asking him? Were they asking him, is this fair? So we have a Gemara like that, says the Rebbe. We have a Gemara in Menachos, where Moshe Rabbeinu sees the end of Rabbi Akiva, and he says, Hashem, zu Torah v'zu Schara, and Hashem says, Sash, quiet, you don't understand. Don't question. This is the reward for Rabbi Akiva's Torah study, that his body is going to be mutilated. Shh, don't ask. So they weren't asking that. That question's already on the book, says the Rebbe. When they said those three words, Rabbeinu Ad Kan, what were they asking? You know what they were saying? Why'd they say Rabbeinu? Why'd they say Rabbeinu? They're saying, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbeinu, be our teacher Ad Kan. Teach us how to have Amunah. We're not questioning God. We believe in Hashem. We know there's a master plan. But teach us how to have such Amunah. Because this level of Amunah, we don't have. As Talmidim, we don't have your Amunah. So Rabbeinu Ad Kan, be our Rebbe in this place. And Rabbi Akiva says, it's not something that I'm acquiring in this moment. Kol Yamai, my whole life I've been waiting. My whole life I've been living with what? With a degree of self-sacrifice, that this is not so different than anything else that I did for Hashem. This is not different. This is not different for me. The Gemara in Moed Katan, Rebbe doesn't quote it, but the Gemara in Moed Katan talks about how, you know, there's, what is it? Totsaos? What did I say? I just forget the number. Yeah, 903. There's 903 ways to die, the Gemara says. The Gematria of the word Totsaos. And the Gemara says, that's a Gemara Gematria. The Gematria of the word Totsaos, there's 903 ways to die. The worst way to die is the way the students of Rabbi Akiva died. In the story in Yuvamos. Right? Svira Somer, like Bomer, that whole story. Yeah, that they died through Askara. A slow type of strangulation where your throat closes up, an asphyxiation where your throat closes up and it becomes unbearable. A person is basically like suffocating slowly. Terrible, horrific death. The Gemara says that's the worst way to die. The best way to die is called Neshika, the kiss of death. Moshe, like Aaron, like Miriam, the way tzaddikim die. And the Gemara says, Askara is like trying to imagine you have a mast of a boat, you know, picture like a big, big ship, right? And there's these heavy, you know, ropes, right? The anchor is tied around this, you know, this metal, whatever, you know, I don't know the boat terms, yeah? And imagine there's this big, you know, this big fat knot and this big, thick rope. And imagine you're trying to pull this knot through this metal hole. Well, the point is that it's not supposed to slip through the hole, right? So you're pulling it, and you're yanking it, you keep pulling it and pulling it until the rope slowly, slowly, slowly continues to shred and to fall apart until eventually it gives away. So the Gemara says the worst type of death is like Askara. It's where your neshama is like being yanked, you know, painfully out of the body. Neshika, the kiss of death, is like taking a hair out of a bowl of milk, let's say. Like a hair falls into your milk and you just, you know, it comes out very easily. Right? Sometimes it's hard to catch, but once you catch it, it comes out pretty easily. Right? So the way that Tzadikim explained it is that to whatever degree you're obsessed with being in your body, your neshama doesn't want to let go. But to the degree that you're obsessed with being with Hashem, your neshama, of course, it's so happy to go back. It doesn't struggle to go back. So if I'm attached to my body, So Hashem, I don't want to let go. But then I'm being selfish, and I'm living for my guf. Instead of letting my neshama go back to the all-encompassing neshama of Hashem, being one with Hashem. So that manifests in one's lifetime also. To the degree that I'm obsessed with myself, it's hard to be moser nefesh. And the Talmid Rabbi Akiva said, Rebbe, it's unbelievable. How do you say Shema Yisrael in this moment? How are you of such a muna in this moment? And Rabbi Akiva says, no, my whole life I've been training myself to be a shliach, to not be selfish, to not be obsessed with my body, right? Interesting that the Greeks, the Avanim, the Syrian Greeks of Hanukkah, were very obsessed with their body. Why is body associated, right? They were also obsessed with the intellect. Why is body and intellect the same versus like Torah and Emunah? Because again, that's exactly the point, right? To the degree that you believe in the neshama, you don't need to be obsessed with the body. That's what the Rebbe is saying. If your Emunah is intact, then you're prepared to what? Then you have everything, and you're prepared to do whatever Hashem asks of you, even if it means to make the ultimate sacrifice. Okay, go to the last page of the piece on page Reish Yud Beis. About 10 lines in, the paragraph that begins, Kinoda meharav zatzal. He says, we know from the Rav. Who's the Rav? Shulchan Aruch HaRav. Baal Tanya. We know from the Baal Tanya, it's in Perek Yud Ches, it's also in Perek Chaf Hei. It's very chashuv ideas in the Tanya, if you want to look it up. It could be it's other places also, but the two places that I know, it's Perek Yud Ches and Perek Chaf Hei. Shelachein gam ish hapachos mi Yisrael. Even the lowest Jew. Muchan limsor nafshol Hashem be'is nisayon. Again, throughout history, there are Jews who are not particularly religious who made the ultimate sacrifice. Even if it's hard sometimes to make good choices when I'm alive, but push comes to shove, how many Jews throughout Jewish history gave their life and in their dying moment died as proud Jews? But when they felt that someone is targeting their essence, even if they weren't able to live with that essence throughout their life. You had Jews throughout the Holocaust. Again, you had very fine religious Jews went to the gas chambers, and you had Jews who lived totally secular. Were Jewish only by Hitler's identification that they were Jewish. And yet some of those Jews, they felt their Yiddishkeit in a strong, there's amazing first-hand accounts of stories of people. Unbelievable faith in their dying moments. Where does that come from? It comes from someone trying to extinguish that spark, that Ur Eloki inside of a person. So it says the Rebbe, if we would just take to heart that why are we suffering now? Again, remember we spoke last week how the Rebbe's theological posture changed over the course of the war? At the beginning it was, we need to do tshuva, we need to be better Jews. Now it says nothing to do with our behavior. This is simply because the neshama is under attack. It's not al shegazalnu. We're not being pursued because of anything we did. The Nazis don't have, they're not holding us accountable for our crimes. We didn't do anything. We're being attacked because we're Jews. This is very much the Hanukkah story. Because we believe in God and we believe in His Torah. And they're not satisfied, what? Simply to extinguish the spark inside of us. Our body is under attack, but it's really our soul that's what they're really after on a deeper level. That's what they feel threatened by. They feel threatened by Jewish existence. But says the Rebbe, if you're feeling a lack of amun, it's because you're too concerned about what's going to happen to your body. He's not preparing Jews to die al kiddush Hashem. He's saying, stop worrying about your body, because that's not you. That's not the essence of you. It's nothing to do with who you really are. It's not your soul, it's not your emotions, it's not your personality, it's not your essence. So the Rebbe says, if you're going to be worried about that, yes, you're going to have amun problems. V'chitachlis kol atzoros hu, Hashem va Torah inam nosnim alev, but the essence of what we're really suffering, you're worried about what's going to happen. You're worried what's going to happen. I'm in the ghetto now. What do they do to my house? What do they do with my? The Nazis took my stuff. The Nazis are going to kill my body. The Rebbe says, no. You got to get focused here. There's a good chance we're going to die. The Rebbe died. He was killed. We need to focus on what's happening here. Hashem is under attack. The Torah is under attack. And if we focus on that, then our amunah will be intact. But if we don't, lachein od nechleshes etzel pratim amunah. But if we're focused on the wrong thing, then it's going to manifest itself as a pagam in our amunah. So says the Rebbe in the last two paragraphs. So hinei, gam yavanim ratzu lashkicham torasecha lavir machuk yirtzonecha. The Yavanim were not primarily attacking our bodies, even though yes, there was a war. Yes, there were Jews who were killed, etc. But it's very clear from the tefilos that they were coming after Torah. They were coming after the ratzon of a Jew. They're coming after our amunah. Because And they did this by afflicting the Jewish body. But when they said, right, when they said, you know, don't circumcise the body, because it was the Greek obsession with the body, and they thought it was barbaric and mutilating the body to give yourself a circumcision, right? They weren't after, it wasn't really about the body, it was about the soul of what Bris Milah represents, about the covenant between man and Hashem. So yes, it manifested with external sorrows and suffering, but what they were really were going for was the light of Beis HaMikdash, the Shem and Shem HaMikdash. The Gamal Yedei Chochmas Yavanis Shispash to Bein Yisrael, the philosophy of Yavan that spread out amongst the Jewish people, Atcha Amr Li Yisrael, that they said to the Jewish people, Kisvu Al Keren Hashur She'ein Lechem Chelek Belukei Yisrael. Very strange decree. Right on the horn of an ox, that you don't believe in what? That you don't believe in, that you don't have a portion in the Jewish God. They wanted us to outwardly proclaim our lack of Amunah. That's what they were after. Torah and Amunah. Last paragraph. Aval Yisrael yadu oz shetachlis kol yisurei haguf shegar b'lehem. But the Jews of Hanukkah stayed focused. They understood, and that's what the tefillah is representing. They understood it's not our guf that's really under attack. What's really under attack is our faith. What's really under attack is our Amunah, our Torah. And by being focused on that, by understanding what should bother us more than anything, Hashem came to the rescue in the merit of their Amunah. And that's what it means. Kishaom the Malchus Yavan Rashal Amcha Yisrael Lashkicham Torasecha Ulavira Mechuki Ritzonecha Ba'ata Brachamecha Harab Ma'atalhem Be'es Sarasam. Hashem came to save us because what? Because of our Tzara. The way the Rebbe's learning it, what was the opening question? Why does it say our Tzara? It's Hashem's Tzara. But the answer is no, we made our Tzara his Tzara. It's the same thing. That's the whole point here. Right? Sometimes our tzaras and Hashem's tzaras are different things. I'm worried about my body and Hashem's worried about my neshama. But when they made their concern the Torah, when they were fighting for Torah and Amunah, so our tzar is his tzar. It's one and the same. The Jews understood what was the ikar. They didn't get distracted. And it was because of that clarity of what this war was really about, right? That they understood what they were fighting for. Al Anisim, Al Milchamos, thank you for the wars. Yes, thank you Hashem for helping me to understand what was actually being under attack. You say Al Anisim, Al Porkan, Al Yeshuos, I understand. Al Milchamos, yes, thank you for giving us the clarity to realize what we're actually fighting for. This was not about destroying Jewish bodies. There was a lot of physical suffering the Jewish people endured once the Yavan started intensifying their decrees. But they understood, the Chashmonaim understood, no, this is not about, this is an attack on God. This is an attack on Beis HaMikdash. This is an attack on Torah, there's an attack on Amunah. And by understanding that, that became their salvation. And the Rebbe's hoping and davening that should be, you know, the ticket to his salvation as well. I'll just end with the remez that I thought of last night. What's the gematria of Torah? Which is Torah? 611, right? The Gemara at the end of Mako says we heard two commandments from Hashem himself, Anochi and Lo Yelecha. Right? And the other 611 we heard from Moshe, Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Again, another Gemara Gematria, right? Torah is Gematria 611, because we heard 611, Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Moshe gave us 611, Hashem gave us the first two, 613 total. So Torah is Gematria 611. What's the Gematria of Amunah? 102. So we said, we spent the last, I don't know, 50 minutes learning that the essence of Hanukkah is fighting for Torah and fighting for Amunah. Again, it's one and the same. Right? What's the gematria of Torah plus Amunah? 713. What's 713? 613. True. What's 713? We mentioned it the other day. 713 is Mahadrim and Mahadrim. Right? That's the Avodah of Hanukkah. The Avodah of Hanukkah is Mahadrim and Mahadrim. He says Gematria Tshuva, we said also. That's a Chanukah. Zos Chanukah in particular is the Gemara HaChasima. The Arizal revealed to us that really the end of Yom Kippur is Zos Chanukah. That's why by Aaron going into Kodesh Kedoshim, it says Bizos Yavo Aaron El Kodesh. Right, it's the end of Yom Kippur. But Chanukah, the Mahajim and the Mahajim of Chanukah. Right, what are we Mahad there? Mahad means to go after. What are we chasing after? What are we trying to? What are we trying to pull back into our corner? Our relationship with Torah and our relationship with Emuna. Other ways to maybe say it also, but I think it's a nice remez. Torah plus Emuna is gematria Mahajim and Mahajim. That's the whole. When that menorah reaches capacity, so to speak, when you filled every you know void of the menorah, you filled every space of it with that Or Eloki, right, which represents the Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, and Ner Mitzvah Torah Or. When you fill up your menorah, when it's full of light, now it's all eight candles are lit, Mahajim and Mahajim. Right, you've defended Torah and you've defended Emuna. Okay, so we should be zocha to know what real Emuna looks like. Again, these are heavy pieces, they're not easy ideas. But that someone who was again in it and had yet to emerge from it, again, he's not reflecting on the war. He's living it and preparing himself to dial Kiddush Hashem, which this holy tzaddik did. It's an unbelievable thing. Yeah.
Do you have the footsteps
maisa?
Like that idea?
Footsteps maisa? What's the footsteps maisa?
Like the guy, someone who's struggling. And
oh, the footsteps maisa. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so
I was carrying you.
Yeah, exactly. So that reminded me of the idea that, like, it's really Hashem's sorrows.
That's right. We're just riding on his shoulders. That was the piece last week. That was the Vayishav piece. The Vayishav piece. Right? It's Hashem's sorrows, so we're just, you know, we're trying to help out a little bit. Yeah. Got your head up first. Well,
is there ever saying that if we have complete Emunah, then our tzaras are Hashem's tzaras?
I think so. Meaning if I'm selfish and I'm worried about, you know, my problems. And again, the call out is pretty intense. The Rebbe's saying, you see someone else suffering, and you're saying, oh, Hashem, take away their suffering. What you're really saying is, I'm not sure that I have Emunah to be able to handle that. Which again, we would all say, we get it. You know, we're not critical of you for not knowing how to die. I want to be alive. I bless everyone here that you should never die with Kiddush Hashem. You should never have to know from that. Right? But a Jew has to, a little bit, Rabbi Akiva said, my whole life, my understanding as a shliach of Hashem, as an Eved Hashem, of having real Emunah, Gematria Eved Hashem, is to not say, oh, you know, now that Rabbi Akiva is like, oh, great, now look what happened to me. After everything I did for Torah, this is what happened to me. He doesn't have any, he's not, no. And the Talmidim are not quite sure how to wrap their heads around that. So they said, Rabbeinu Ad Kan, be our Rebbe here. We're not sure how to have such a Emunah. Be mashpia your Emunah onto us. That's what the Rebbe does. He tries to be mashpia what he understands, being a little older, and a little more knowledge or experience, onto the next generation. That's what it is. Yeah.
Two questions. One, these Talmidim that are talking to me, given out, these are the ones that are post.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess.
It would, like,
right. Right.
So these are the ones that presumably would have learned the lesson.
Right. Right. They've already seen a lot. Right. Maybe that's where Rabbeinu Ad Kan. Like again, like we've suffered enough. Why do we have to suffer more? And Rabbi Akiva was like, "What do you mean? You have to be prepared to do whatever Hashem asks of you. Your life is not your life." God, this is in a world of tremendous sense of entitlement, this is such a hard notion. I mean, this is it. This is like everything. This is Dveikus, this is Bittul, this is Emunah. This is everything. This is everything that Judaism is supposed to be. But we live in a world, and again, our body tells us otherwise, that, you know, I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, these Talmidim presumably have seen a lot.
And then also about so how much of that is us just redefining it in terms of making Hashem's Torahs, and how much of it is actually transforming it into, like, our, as long as, like, we're still kind of focusing, like, if our Torahs are still fundamentally our Torahs, we're just like putting over the label and then like figuring out how to make it into something that's Hashem's Tzaras, but it's still something that's like benefiting us. Then I feel like that's not like genuine.
All right.
But it's still
you're like, saying that's like that. It's like the davening, you know, like if you daven for someone else and you have that same problem, so you're answered first, right? That Rashi. It's like, that seems like kind of cheating. Like I'm, so really I care about myself, right? But since I'm struggling financially, so I daven for someone else to have financial success, but all I really care about, like, is that I should have the bracha of putting someone else first so that way I get answered first. And also, like, when I focus on Hashem's Tzaros, knowing that that's the ticket to actually my own salvation, is that...
Is that enough?
Is that enough, right? I don't know. I don't know. You know, the Rebbe is pushing for further and further sincerity. And it's that's what Talmid Rebbe Akiva couldn't grasp.
It's know? Really about telling your, like, when you're davening for your friend, you're not even thinking about yourself.
It's a real thing. Davening for the Golus Hashchina, it's a very deep idea in the Svarim HaKadoshim. It's a very hard idea. To care about Hashem, you know, Hashem suffering more than my own suffering. I don't feel bad for Hashem. Like, you're Hashem. Like, you know, I feel bad for me. You know, you've got everything, Hashem. But if you really believe that Hashem, Imo Anochi Bitzara, that my suffering is, you know, is Hashem's suffering, and to be genuinely, have we ever in our life even felt that? Have we ever felt that? It's a very high madrigo. To feel really, like, pained for Hashem. Maybe you've seen, like, a chil Hashem that bothered you, that you felt, like, embarrassed for Hashem. Maybe that's an expression of feeling pained for Hashem. But again, am I paying for Hashem or I'm embarrassed that, like, this Jew made a chil Hashem and I'm wearing a kippah, so, like, it looks bad for me? Or do I really feel like, ugh, chil Hashem, like, it pains me to see Hashem's name disgraced in the world. It pains me to see Hashem's reputation sullied in the world. I really feel Hashem's pain. When you see a Jew suffering, to know that Hashem is hurting more than the person who's hurting himself. Do we even know how to tap in? It's hard. It's a deep thing. Ozzy, what do you want to say?
I was going to say it's interesting also that we read the Yosef story around the time of Hanukkah. Because besides Avram, he also very much exemplified this. Like, his whole life, he kept this semuna and also never got into the goof. He also ran away from Asher Poti.
That's right.
That's right.
He rose above, right? That's right. He had every reason to go off the derech and to hate religious people and sold out by his own brothers. He had every reason to give into that temptation and he rose above it. Yeah, Yosef has a lot to do with Hanukkah. Yeah.
Going back to when I had the familiar to have early on, I just don't understand. I was on board from last night, and he's in, like, a good place to, like, lift it up to Hashem. He does what he's quote-unquote supposed to do.
Okay.
And he was talking to me, and he's like, I just don't feel it. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, I have, like, this problem with my Muna right now. Like, I'm not, like, I feel fired. But, like, it's just, like, I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. I feel like I'm ruined. Like, I'm looking, like, he's like, nothing's going according to plan. Like, I have this, I'm doing this, that's happening.
Right. Like, I'm doing my part for Hashem, and Hashem's not helping me.
He's like, nothing's going according to my plan. I'm like, well, it is. There's your plan, and there's the plan. I'm like, your plan is, like, you just have to just take a step back. You just kind of know, like, the fact that you're so attached to your plan, like, that's not the plan.
Right.
The plan is whatever.
That's right. The only way to be able to say that is emunah and anava and humility. How else can a Jew say that? Right. To say it's not about my plan. Every one of us has a plan. Every one of us has expectations from the world, from life, from Hashem, how things ought to be. And then Hashem says, like, that's not the plan. That's your plan. It's not the plan. That's right. Yeah.
Again, I think that was
the line where he said that it's incumbent upon us to believe the mesiras nefesh of Amunah is that even in that period of Hester, Shakol Mimenu Yisbarach Letova, v'kol b'tzedek, v'chol ha'yisurim he maleim avas Hashem liYisrael. On page Reishiyud, 10 lines down, that the yisurim themselves are filled with Hashem's love for us. To be able to genuinely say, like Rabbi Akiva, everything Hashem does is letav, everything is for good. To be like Nachum Ish Gamzu, who's suffering horribly, and to say, yeah, Gamzu Latova, this is good, it's all good. Again, I'm not saying that like we're there. We have our whole life to try to keep working on these things. But to not be embittered, to not be angry, to believe that even our pain is needed, and it's coming from a place of love. Like a parent who tells a child, this is yes or no to something that the child wants, and the child's all upset. My parents are so mean, my mom's so mean, my dad's so mean. Parents are so mean to me, right? What do you mean? We're protecting you, we're looking out for you. We're trying to keep you safe, we're trying to keep you healthy, we're trying to keep you responsible. The child doesn't understand because he's too immature and too self-absorbed. But I want this now. I need this now. What I need. Okay. So Hashem says, okay. But I know it's not what you need. And that's hard. These are hard. They're hard things. Humility. Moshe Rabbeinu was Anav Mikol Adam. He's the closest to Hashem, and the Torah says one thing about him. Anav Mikol Adam. That's what he's about. He's not the smartest, not the most charismatic. He's humble. He makes himself a kli, and because of that, he receives Hashem. He receives the light of Hashem. Okay, should be blessed. We'll give you the last word. Yeah, go for it.
I don't know if it's about word, but I mean, this connects very strongly with the thing.
Sure.
And like, just like the stories that he speaks about when he's there. And
sure.
How like, it's really the way that Rebbe's often talking about in a more vague way, but like really the destruction of the God is like, they just had to be ready.
And you can choose how to respond. Man's search for meaning is exactly that. It's your choice to decide to want to keep going. To accept what's happening and to say, Afal Pichin, I still choose, V'charta B'chaim. That's what it is. V'charta B'chaim. To choose life. Yeah. It's heavy stuff. Okay.
A whole bunch of donuts over there.
Let's take a little break.